Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
Good evening, all, and welcome to another great edition of the Steve Carsey and the Kid Show. He is Steve Carsey. I am the Kid. Steve, say hello to the folks. All right, hold on one second. So we're having a little bit of technical issues from the jump, which is never fun, but we are on the line right now and just waiting for Steve to be able to hear me. Steve, can you hear me?
Yeah, thank you. Okay, there we go.
Okay, perfect. So we're both live now. I was just telling the audience, welcome back to another great edition of the Steve Carsey and the Kid Show. We're going to start with our one thing, obviously, and I know I'm ready for that. I don't know if you are. And you'd like to go first?
Yeah, you know, I'll go first. You know how I like to go first on some of these things, mm-hmm. because every time I let you go first, you always cherry pick what I'm going to do. So hopefully that we don't have the same thing, but we very well might tonight. My mm-hmm. one thing is going to be, about a week ago when Rugi Odor and Bautista, you know, had some words and ended up getting into some fisticuffs and how that got blown up, dating back all the way to the playoffs last year and what they deemed the bat flip from Jose Bautista, kind of got under their skin and, they felt like they showed it up. They waited till the last at bat against the Blue Jays because the Rangers did not play the Blue Jays anymore. And Bush ends up hitting him with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Fast forward, ground ball. He goes in to take Rugi Odor out, slides past the bag, which is now illegal. And Rugi Odor took some exception to that. You know, we all know what happened. But my point is that the umpires, in my opinion, need to stay out of the middle of it, and they need to let the players police what is going on between the two teams. When that happens, mm-hmm. the players know between each other who did something wrong, who did something right, and each team takes care of it, and it's over and done with. The umpires seem to inflame the situation when a ball is a little bit inside, and then they start warning benches and think that something's going to come about. So I just think that sometimes the umpires need to take a step back. They need to have a little bit of feel for the game and realize what's going on. If it gets really out of hand, that's when they need to step in and calm things down. But usually the players will take care of what has happened between the teams mm-hmm. by themselves. So that's my one last thing.
Yeah, definitely a great it's our first thing, not the last thing just yet. We don't want to fast forward too much.
No, first thing.
First thing. So I thought you said last thing. My apologies there. For me, I want to touch back on what you just said because there's a lot to that. It's a conversation been going on for a while. But my first thing is, there's a couple that I really want to talk about, but my one thing is going to be Josh Hamilton, his story. Obviously tremendous ups, tremendous downs, and now news that he's going to be having season-ending knee surgery. He only played 50 games after being dealt over, pretty much given away, most of his salary being eaten by the Anaheim Angels, who he signed a very lucrative contract with. I believe it was 5 years, $125 million to have left Texas a few years back. Joined Anaheim, just didn't work out there. They ended up pretty much tossing him out. Texas scooped him up because it was a low risk, high reward opportunity for them. Played 50 games for him last year, wasn't really himself. This year, again, much maligned with injuries. That seems to be the story throughout a lot of baseball, actually. If we're going to be covering some injury issues coming up. This is a team as a whole between last year and this year has had a tremendous amount of injuries from the guys like Neftali Feliz, Sin Soo Choo, again on the DL. After just coming back off, he played, I believe, one game. I think he went 1-for-4. We have a lot of that going on, a lot of injuries and a lot of injury news to cover. But my first thing is Josh Hamilton, and it looks like, and I hope this isn't it, but we've definitely seen the best of Josh Hamilton up to this point. We might still have another decent year or two in him, but I think the days of Josh Hamilton, fortunately, are over in baseball.
Yeah, you know, it's been a tough go for Josh. You know, he's just one of those guys who's run into some misfortunes, not only on the field but off the field. He's done a great job of keeping that in check for quite a while. You know, like you said, the Rangers took a low risk, high reward on him, and it just hasn't panned out up to this point.
Yep. Now, heading back to what you were saying, Steve, about the umpires getting out of it, a lot of people think that they've taken more of almost an activist role, and that's problematic for a lot of reasons. One, because they do inflame the issues and the emotions and things like that. So that's obviously a huge issue. The other huge issue is that it's not allowing the players to get it off their chest. When you have something like what happened with Rougned Odor, and obviously there's going to be retaliation, this is going to go on for at least the rest of the season, because that was a big old punch from a little guy like Rougned Odor to a big old boy like Jose Bautista. Whether people felt it's warranted or otherwise, that's aside from the point. But the umpires, I think, the way that they get involved, I do agree with you, Steve. I think there needs to be some sort of standard, or better standard, on how the umpires treat the situations like this, because I think the more baseball tries to become more restrictive in certain elements, I think the more it damages the players and their ability and their psyche to be able to do what they believe they need to do to either make a statement or stand up for themselves. And I love that first thing that you said, because it's something that a lot of people have been talking about, especially since that punch.
Yeah, you know, it seems on the replay that he was protecting himself. You know, Bautista seemed like, one, he had intent to go into second base, sliding over the base and possibly hurting him, and then jumping up, and then, you know, actually getting in his face, so to speak. And that's when he kind of uncorked the punch, and, you know, things got a little bit hairier. But one of those things where I think we just need to let the players police the game a little bit more themselves, like it has been done in the past, and let the umpires, you know, be the ones that are not to be seen.
Yeah, for sure. And before we get back into talking baseball, let's just cover the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs real quick. We have the Oklahoma City Thunder, so far shocking Warriors fans and a lot of analysts, obviously, as well. The Warriors are down 2-1 in the series. They got blown out the last game. They were down by, I believe, as much as 40 or 41 points. Certainly not Golden State Warriors type season so far. They've lost 4 games now in the playoffs, Steve, after losing 9 throughout the whole season. Of course, everything is dialed up in the playoffs, but they haven't looked good in this series at all. They're not playing their game. They're not doing their thing. We're seeing some tensions, obviously, spilling over onto the court, stuff that they're saying off the court, obviously, and all the emotions that go along with being in the playoffs and being so close to being in the finals. And, of course, if you're the Thunder, playing with that chip on their shoulder, having Kevin Durant be in his final year, his final games, potentially with the Oklahoma City Thunder. You have Russell Westbrook next year potentially becoming a free agent. You have the reigning champs. You have a team that broke the single season wins record. There's a lot of emotion in that series, obviously. So probably going to see some more hairy situations, to borrow your word, Steve, throughout the rest of the series. On the other side, you have the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Toronto Raptors, and what's been kind of a quiet series, only because through the first two games, the Cavs were blowing out the Raptors, and just, you know, there was absolutely no answer for LeBron. The Cavs finally lost the playoff game. They lost Game 3. I still don't think that's going to matter much in the series. They're playing right now. Cleveland, again, leading 2-1 in the series. They're down 5 points in the game right now in the second quarter with just under 9 minutes to go, and it's a 31-26 score. So we'll keep you posted on that. NHL side, we have the Tampa Bay Lightning going up against the Penguins and leading the series 3-2, and it's a tough series. I mean, think about both teams pretty much rolled their way into this series. Now we have what's going to end up becoming a game, obviously Game 6 scenario here, potentially Game 7, two really strong teams, two teams that want it. Marc-Andre Fleury coming in, and that's going to become a kind of a controversial call for Penguins and for Penguins fans. On the other side, you have the St. Louis Blues tied up with the San Jose Sharks. So a lot of great series here, Steve. Again, no cheapies. The NBA East is probably the weakest of all those series that we talked about so far. But again, this is the playoff time. You got to love it. You got to love the emotion. Sometimes it gets a little carried away, and sometimes you see things you really would rather not see. But that's, again, that's playoffs, and that's people playing with their hearts and on their sleeves.
Yeah, when you get deep in the playoffs, as basketball and hockey are right now, the teams can taste how close they are to getting to the final series and having an opportunity to win the championship, what they've worked so hard for, you know, during the season. And that goes for any sport. It's baseball when you get into the championship series, and, you know, it's to play for the World Series. You know, everything just intensifies. You know, gets magnified by the media, but, you know, every basket matters, every minute matters, just like every pitch matters when you get into the playoffs. So I wouldn't expect anything less in any sport when it comes down to the end to see what we're seeing and see how close that these series are right now and probably will go to till the end. I'm thinking that maybe each of these series might go to seven games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Again, we'll keep you updated as the show goes on the Toronto Raptors Cleveland Cavaliers game. Gave the score before just under 9 minutes, and Toronto's off to a little bit of a good start right there. They were up by five last I checked. So heading back to baseball, we have a lot of news to discuss there. Brian Mattis of the Baltimore Orioles being traded over for minor leaguers over to the Atlanta Braves. And the full trade is it's competitive balance pick in 2016 draft. Also going to Atlanta Braves and the minor league pitchers Brandon Barker and Trevor Belcheck. So obviously the Baltimore Orioles giving up on Brian Mattis, who they've tried in a lot of different roles, from starter to reliever, middle, you know, long reliever, all that kind of stuff. So so that's the trade there. We haven't seen the trade in a little bit. It's obvious teams are trying to figure out who they are and what they are. And you don't see trades this early in the season, but there we have one so far, a small trade, but nonetheless a trade. Mentioned injuries before, Steve. We have the Royals losing Alex Gordon, who struggled a bit to start off the season, the guy they signed who turned down that qualifying offer and ended up re-signing with them in a really lucrative contract. He's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks for a wrist fracture. We're seeing a lot of that this year as well. Wrist from Ryan Braun had some wrist issues early on, a bunch of other players with wrist issues. We have Yu Darvish, some good news, coming back, Tommy John surgery last year. Of course, the Rangers can't wait to get him back, put him up with Cole Hamels. And if you get Derek Holland to be somewhere around the 4 ERA guy and obviously the other guys they have in that rotation, Colby Lewis winning and winning a lot this year and doing well for him. So Yu Darvish coming back, I think, is a huge boon. I think that changes the dynamic of that division for sure, Steve.
No question about it in my mind. If Yu Darvish is healthy and he's coming back into that rotation and giving that rotation a bolster, I think they probably become the favorite in the AL West as of that point, because their rotation is going to be tough. You know, as you said, with Darvish, Hamels, and the guys following, they're just going to have to get their bullpen straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The issues there, Sean Tellison removed from his ninth inning closer duties. I believe Sam Dyson's the one that's going to be has taken over. Sean Tellison, somebody I drafted in a couple leagues based on how he was last year. Had a pretty solid season last year and the first full season as the Rangers closer. They obviously let Neftali Feliz go. Neftali is over in Pittsburgh now. He was their star closer for a while before getting hurt, and obviously that derailed his closing career, and then they wanted to move him to the starting to a starting role, and it was a whole big mess. So a lot of closers having issues this year. We mentioned Ken Giles and all the issues there. There's a lot of teams that are having those kind of problems. Sean Doolittle, not quite himself. And a whole slew of others that we'll be talking about as the season goes on. We have Joey Gallo being called up. That's very exciting for them when they have guys like Norm Mazar up there, and you have Adrian Beltre hitting really well, and Prince Fielder, you have to believe, is going to come around soon and start smacking that ball around. You have Yu Darvish there. Again, the Rangers really primed for a nice little run right here. That division looking a little bit weaker than we had expected and anticipated it to be. only because the Astros are dead last in that division at 17-28. Were it not for the lowly Twins, which is another conversation that we have to have, Steve, who are sitting at 11-32 after challenging for a playoff spot for most of last year, have been absolutely dreadful so far this year. The Astros sitting at 17-28, dead last in that division, second worst in the AL, 3-7 in the last 10 games back of the Mariners in that division. Mariners being led by Robbie Cano, and then right behind them, the Texas Rangers are 25-19. And playing great at home, 14-7 at home. So the Rangers are primed for what I believe is going to be a really big run right now, and I think they're going to there's going to be a little bit of separation in that division, although the Mariners have been really good. You have Kevin Kiermaier is going to miss 8 to 10 weeks, broken left hand. You have Ryan Vogelsong was carted off the field today at what I believe was a second inning, getting hit in the face with a pitch. Now, Steve, this is one of the scariest things, obviously, not just for the pitcher, and ultimately it is for the pitcher, because there's a trauma that comes with that next time you go to pitch and all that kind of stuff, but also for the hitter, because that does rattle a hitter. Now, we're taught to just finish up the play, whatever, but it's hard to run to first base after you just see the guy on the floor and likely bleeding or out cold. So let's talk about this a little bit, because I think it's very important. People kind of become a little desensitized to it, and I think that's wrong. I think we need to understand what it is and what the emotional and psychological impacts are of something like this, because it is part of the game, but there's more to it than that.
Yeah, well, I think each player is different, and each player handles it in a different way. Vogelsong, he was hitting and got hit in the face while he was batting. So, you know, the trauma of him being in the box and getting hit is a little bit different than maybe getting hit by a line drive. But, you know, you just don't know what's in the mind of not only Vogelsong, but, whoever threw it and the pitcher who threw it and, you know, what his thoughts are and if he's going to be able to come back and be able to throw strikes. Some guys can. Some guys have a little hesitation because they don't want to hit somebody again because, you know, it is so – psychologically taxing when you hit somebody in the face because you're not trying to do that. Ball gets right. away. You kind of leave it, up and in, and he ends up, not being able to get out of the way. And I think that's a lost art. And I know Vogelsong's a pitcher and they don't hit very much, but he has been in the National League for a long time and has stepped in the batter's box and has an idea. But I think it's a lost art. Nowadays in professional baseball on guys, knowing how to take a pitch on the inside corner and be able to turn in with their shoulder and protect their face instead of getting hit the way they do when they just try to back out of the way doing that. But you're right. It is definitely one of those things that, can be a huge factor in a player's career if he is the one who throws the ball and hits somebody in the face or if he is the one who gets hit in the face. So we'll just have to see how these guys bounce back and, on both ends of it.
Yeah, it was an 0-2 fastball thrown by Jordan Lyles, struck Ryan Vogelsong in the face, and he went down instantly. Again, it's a very scary moment there. We hate to see that. We remember what happened with Giancarlo Stanton, and we remember what happened to a whole bunch of players, whether on the offensive side, defensive side, being on the pitcher's side. Once he throws that pitch, he's now a defensive player. So it's a very scary thing. Hopefully all parties are okay, and obviously the tensions should be diffused because it's not intentional, as you had said. He was clutching a towel close to his eye, his left eye. So we'll see if any of that ends up happening. News should be reported tomorrow on what the test results were at Allegheny Hospital out there in Pittsburgh. To the National League side, we have, staying on the National League side, Noah Syndergaard being the NL Player of the Week. Thor, absolutely ridiculous, showing that he is not only one of the best in that, one of the best in the National League, but one of the best in baseball as of right now. It's his second year in the league. 21-0 strikeout to walk ratio. He's been absolutely redonkulous, as they say. It's hard to hit him, it's hard to see it, and he just has it. He just knows what he has to do when he's up there. And it's amazing to see that kind of poise. And really not just Syndergaard, but even from Harvey when he broke out and still now, Jacob deGrom, he's a little bit older than most people understand or most people know. even though he's only been in the league for a couple of years, a few years. But they all have poise when they're up there, and I think that's a very special thing because it takes a lot of guys, especially with this much pressure on them, this heavy burden of expectations, to be able to go out there and perform like they do, not 2-3 good starts in a row, and then you blow up and you give up 6 or 7 runs in two or three innings. They're not doing that. They're doing this consistently. It's really amazing what they have there in New York. How long they're able to keep this core together is a whole different story. But right now, these guys and what the Mets have done over the last number of years shows that patience does pay off. Of course, having the right guys in that position, to be able to do to allow you to be patient doesn't hurt either.
These guys have been tremendous. That rotation, they're actually, with Steven Matz pitching as well as he is as well, he's actually, helping Harvey get through some of his bad starts, being able to cover some of those games that Harvey is not getting the job done. I think there's a mechanical flaw, as I said before, in Harvey's delivery, and I'm not sure that they've figured that out yet, but I'm sure they're working on it real hard. But the Mets, these guys go out, start after start, and it doesn't hurt to have the type of stuff they have. They're not trying to pitch with 90 to 92 miles an hour fastballs. They're pitching with an arsenal that's anywhere between 95 and 100, ungodly off-speed stuff. So it's tough to hit. These guys just, as long as they're healthy and go out there every fifth day, I think they're gonna dominate as long as they have their stuff, for a period of time. They're just in a tremendous spot right now, the New York Mets, as far as, the starting rotation goes and how young these guys are and how controllable they are for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of control, there are certain guys that are under control for a long time because they got signed for a while. Justin Upton being one of those guys. We talked about him a lot during this year, especially in the preseason and before the preseason, that how long it was taking for him to get signed and what to expect from this year. I thought he would do really well. I mean, you have probably the best pure hitter of this generation, or at least since the 2000s, in Miguel Cabrera. It's amazing what he's been able to do, both power and obviously and batting average is just absolutely ridiculous. But to have him on your team, have the other great hitters you have on your team to struggle as much as Justin Upton has. I mean, Melvin Upton Jr., his brother, has done better than him, and everybody pretty much wrote off his career. Melvin Upton Jr., of course, otherwise known as BJ Upton. If you put the two of them together, Steve, last I checked, Justin Upton had 2 homers on the season, scratched today with the quad, and Mark Teixeira, who has 3 home runs this year, only batting a paltry 193 so far. He's a notoriously slow starter, but this is ridiculous so far. 44 strikeouts already in 41 games, so he's averaging more than a strikeout per game. It's pretty embarrassing so far to start. If you look at some of the guys that are up there, I mean, Chris Carter has 13. Jose Altuve, I believe, has 9 home runs. So I'm not making it where you have to hit the most home runs in the world or this is what your main focus is as a player, but you have to be feeling a little embarrassed at this point in the season to be hitting as poorly as those guys have. Now, let's go into the minds of this, Steve. We have one whose contract is expiring and is more towards the twilight of his career, and a guy who many, Justin Upton, many have felt that he's overrated. I think you're in that camp as well. Signing that big contract, it took him a long time to get that contract. $22 million is what he's getting paid this year. Of course, not showing that talent and showing what a lot of people have said, that he's not worth this long-term contract with high dollars attached to it.
Yeah, I am in that camp. I wasn't quite sure what the Tigers were doing when they signed him to that long-term deal. He was still lingering out there, and I just think Detroit thought they'd take a flyer on him. And as of right now, and it's still early in the contract, it looks like it's backfiring, on the Tigers. And with Teixeira, I just think that as you said, he's coming towards the tail end of his career. He's a little bit older. Guy's stuff is a little bit better that he's facing each time out. He probably has a little bit slower bat speed. Yep. As he's getting a little bit older, and he's not able to catch up to those balls that he was able to with some of the aches and pains that he have and some of the injuries that he's gone through over the past couple of years. So You know, we saw, you know, Jason Giambi in the last couple of years be a pinch hitter off the bench and, you know, not be able to play every day. And it just looks like, you know, Teixeira may be, you know, dwindling down to that DH role and playing a couple times a week so he can stay as fresh as possible.
And one of the things that shocks me the most is Teixeira has always been known as a guy that walks a lot. Historically, he struck out over 100 times a lot in his career. His 1,380 strikeouts as of this very second, lifetime 271 batting average. This year, batting 193, 295 on base percentage. And that's the biggest trouble for me is that last year, he had a big power season, 31 homers in only 111 games, of course, with the injuries, which allowed Greg Bird to do his thing before Greg Bird got hurt this year. Otherwise, this Teixeira thing might not be as big a deal this year because they would have someone else to slot in there. But last year, he hit 255 and 357 on base percentage, which is right around his lifetime 363 on base. He's not that 400 guy that he was back in the middle of his career, early days with the Yankees and so on. But when you have a walk total of 21 versus 44 strikeouts when he had 85 in 111 games last year and 255 clip. Again, it doesn't mean he can't turn it around. He likely will, at least to some juncture. But, again, this is not the guy that we even saw last year, let alone the guy we saw 5-6 years back, especially when he was with the Braves and literally tore it up. And just I was so sad when the Braves let him go, but I understood why they had to. They weren't going to be able to re-sign him, so why keep him? And they gave him so much for him to begin with. On the other side, that division is awfully tight, Steve. I mean, we knew that the AL East is going to be really difficult, and now it's even tighter than we had initially thought. Right now, the Yankees, who have done really well, winning 7 of the last 10, they swept the 4-game set against the and as well they should have against Oakland A's, who are below 500. They were 19-22 heading into that series, where the Athletics now 19-26. The Yankees 1 game under 500. So nice little run for them. I believe it was 5 games in a row there, sitting third in that division. The worst team in that division is not the worst team in that division. And I know it sounds oxymoronic, but the Blue Jays are 22-24 at the bottom of that division, 6 games back of the Orioles and Red Sox. And Orioles and Red Sox tied for first there. The Orioles have a 26-16 record. The Red Sox 27-17, obviously having played 2 more games because of weather and other things. So those will likely be made up. Unless the games don't count. I think that's the way they do it now, Steve, is if the games don't count, they don't make up the games. Is that correct?
Yeah, but that's more towards the end of the season. I'm sure they've scheduled some doubleheaders, you know, because they do play each other again, obviously being in the division and depending who they get rained out against. But, yeah, that division, as we talked about early in our, you know, prior to the season, in our early discussions, that was going to be a division that's going to be, you know, very even, and it's going to be, you know, one of those things where it's going to be up and down all year long, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. I think certain teams will be able to go on a run and, you know, make up some games. And as you said, the Blue Jays are not the worst team in that division. I see them turning around. Their offense is going to be a little bit better, I think, as we get into June, and you know, I expect that division to be even tighter than what it is now by the time we get into August and September.
Agreed. Right now, the Toronto Raptors are up by 12 on the Cleveland Cavs. We have just over 2 minutes left, 2 minutes and 11 seconds to be exact. The Raptors are up 51-39 on the Cleveland Cavs, the favorite Cleveland Cavs. And just a little bit more to talk about baseball-wise, there's somebody that's doing something really special right now. I'm going to save it because it could potentially be a last lick. But right now, I want to talk about one team, my Braves, 12-31, the second worst team in baseball, the Twins, the aforementioned Twins, 11-32 on the season. The Twins are 4-19 away, 7-13 at home. The Braves are 2-17. At home, 10-14 away. I don't have any way to explain this, Steve. I'd like for you to do your best job of doing it. They're 14 and a half back. Of course, the seasons have been written off. But 2-17 at home is not something you see very often, especially from a team like this. They do have a pretty good fan base out there, of course, all those years of winning, and that's not been the case the last year and this year. They have a new manager now. There's not much excitement there. But 2-17 at home is still, no matter how bad the team is, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, it is. I think everybody knew that they were going into rebuilding mode. They're getting that new stadium. You know, Freddie Gonzalez took the major hit of being fired. It's just one of those things. It's a cycle that teams go through. You know, nobody was saying, you know, nobody was complaining when they won however many division titles in a row that they won in the 90s and early 2000s. So it's just a cycle that they're going through. They're developing players. They're going to have money open up when free agent season, you know, comes around before their stadium the new stadium opens up. And I think that's what they're planning for. I think they have a plan in place. And unfortunately, they're taking the brunt of it right now instead of, you know, down the road.
Well, they certainly hope they have a plan in place. Of course, they pretty much dismantled that team. There's very few pieces left. Freddie Freeman's one of those guys. AJ Przinsky is another one of those guys. Of course, he's not part of the future of that team. Just right now, they do have some players there that you'd be excited to see. As the season goes on, we'll see more players get called up, and they'll probably make another trade or two. But as of right now, this is not a team that has any excitement there. So, again, great time for them to have traded Shelby Miller, who's been awful this year, to say the least. One of those guys that we're going to see soon, probably not this year, Dansby Swanson, has been doing really well and is obviously an amazing pickup for them. So we'll see what the Braves end up doing the rest of this year. They did end up, again, picking up Brian Mattis in a trade with the Baltimore Orioles for two minor leaguers. That was earlier today. Just a quick recap on league leaders. This is just the four main statistical fields for batters, for offensive players and pitchers. You have Daniel Murphy still leading, hitting .387, still leading in batting average. You have Ryan Braun now picked up, now hitting .360. You have Martin Prado at .353 as your top three. Of course, that's going to change. It's just amazing that Daniel Murphy's been able to do this for so long. On the home run side, you have Nolan Arenado, Yoenis Cespedes, and Todd Frazier is off to a bit of a slow start, all at 14 home runs right now. RBI-wise, you have Robbie Cano at 39 RBIs. You have David Ortiz, who's having one of the best seasons of his career, certainly to start. Big hits, just doing a lot of big things. They had an emotional night the other night. They retired Tim Wakefield and Jason Veritek's numbers. That was a great experience. I'm not a Red Sox fan, but I appreciate baseball and what they were able to do in turning that that city around and that baseball club around from, you know, obviously the curse of the Bambino to winning three titles in short order and really becoming the team of so far this century, along with the San Francisco Giants. If you look at those two clubs, those are the clubs that have really dominated so far in this century. So it's really impressive. And David Ortiz in the last season of his career, of course, he's going to be getting those questions of, is this really it? And if you're David Ortiz, Steve, do you hang it up and go on a high note, or do you try to say, you know what, maybe I can go one more year?
You know, that is a tough question, and only he can answer that. But if I happen to be in his shoes and I am doing what I'm doing this year and I'm feeling good and my body's feeling good, I'm not really sure why I wouldn't want to play for at least another year or two, because, you know, these guys are going to understand, and I've been there. Your career is going to end at some point, and usually when your career ends, you can't go back and be that kind of player or be a player back in the big leagues if you're taking a couple years and you're aging, you know, like David Ortiz is. So I'm saying if you're successful and you're doing what you need to be doing and you're productive and you feel good, you know, I would consider him playing again next year.
Mm-hmm. There's a collective cheer from Red Sox Nation listening to the show and those who will be listening to this. Definitely a collective cheer there and a collective sigh from Yankees fans and really the rest of baseball, because he's pretty much killed everybody that he's went up against, especially the Yankees. David Ortiz, 37 RBIs on the season, tremendous season so far. After everybody had written him off years ago when he had that wrist problem and coming back and doing what Big Poppy does. On the stolen base side, we have Jose Altuve still leading there, 15 stolen bases. You have Villar of the Brewers, and then Starling Marte at 13. Marte has been amazing so far this year. Gregory Polanco has been really great, developing very nicely. You have Andrew McCutchen, really been the laggard in that amazing outfield of the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know he's going to turn it around. Does have eight dingers on the season so far. Batting average is weaker than you expect to see it, but you better believe at the end of the year, we're going to be talking about Andrew McCutchen potentially having another MVP on his mantle. But that's the rest of the year right now. The younger guys are stealing the spotlight out there in Pittsburgh. Pitching-wise, Jake Arrieta continues to set the pace, 1.29 ERA. And again, just a great continuation for him. We'd love to see that. Chris Sale, 1.58 ERA, 9 wins to lead all of baseball. Just absolutely amazing. What do you have to do to be able to get some runs off this guy? Really, that's what it comes down to. Get some runs. Forget about winning against him. If you score one run against him, that's kind of like a victory right there. And this guy has just been just absolutely phenomenal. If you look at his starts, he's just the last two, May 13th against the Yankees, 9 innings, 6 hits, 1 earned, no walks, of course, 6 Ks. Doesn't like to give up walks because the following start, he went complete game, 4 hits, 1 earned run, no walks, 9 Ks against the Houston Astros. Say what you will about the Astros, how bad they've been so far to start the season. They have a great offense, and it's been amazing what Chris Sale's been able to do against quality teams and some weaker teams a few starts ago against the Twins. So amazing stuff there. You have Rick Porcello at 7 wins, Steve. Who would have thunk it after the awful year they had last year and not really living up to the high expectation that they've set for him, which might have not been justified to begin with. I was certainly one of the ones that are very vocal against the contract that he received last year, but so far this year has been really solid.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've talked about a bunch of those guys and Chris Sale, when you have the type of stuff that he has and he features on, every fifth day. He's a guy who's has a lot of experience, knows how to pitch now, knows his stuff to the best of his abilities, learns how to add and subtract and not worrying about blowing guys away all the time. He's actually starting to pitch. Porcello, you don't really think he would be in the spot he is now, but he's on a team that scores some runs. He's been in some games where he's been very comfortable. And, as I continue to read some stories on him, his stuff has ticked up and his stuff has gotten better. And, he's just having one of those years where things are starting to click for him. He's starting to figure things out and he's being more consistent in what he does.
Yep, Rick Purcell right now 7-2 on the season. ERA sitting right around the mid threes in 9 games so far. 57 innings pitched, 54 Ks, 109 WHIP, and that's one of my favorite stats in baseball. Steve, 109 WHIP, 135 lifetime WHIP, so well below that average. We'll see if he's able to keep that going. He got beat up a little bit against Kansas City back on the 17th, allowing 4 runs in 5 innings. And then giving up two runs against Cleveland in 5 2/3 of work out there. So struggled a little bit there. Did only give up the 2 earned runs there, but of course not able to finish up that to get to that 6 inning mark. But Rick Porcello so far, a great start. He's a big boy, 6'5", 200 pounds. He's only 27, so he's still got a lot of time to do his thing. On the other side, the other 27-year-old, mentioned Chris Sale before, 0.72 WHIP. 1.58 ERA in 68 in the third inning. And then Clayton Kershaw, the cream of the crop, 70 innings so far, 88 strikeouts, 0.70 WHIP, which, Steve, his lifetime WHIP is beyond ridiculous to begin with. Lifetime WHIP of 102, so he's below that by a lot. It's amazing the run that Kershaw's on again, and not just his double-digit strikeout streak that he's on now, but just in general, this is the guy who a lot of people thought in the beginning of last year that his stuff was disappearing. He was struggling, giving up home runs, this and that. And then if it were not for Arrieta and Zach Greinke, he would have been the runaway Cy Young winner. And looks like, he might end up winning the Cy Young this year despite the difficultness of National League pitchers. You have Madison Bumgarner having a great season, Syndergaard, Jose Fernandez, Max Scherzer. It's just an incredible crop of pitchers that Major League Baseball has now. Just really fun to watch. I'm a big pitching guy, as you know.
Yeah, through the first 10 starts, all those guys you just mentioned have been tremendous. You know, there's still 20 more starts to go in the season. So these guys are going to have to continually keep it up, go out there every fifth day, and continue to put the numbers up like they're doing now. I do see, you know, a tight race between two or three guys as it comes down to the end and who's going to, you know, win the NL Cy Young Award. I think Arrieta is going to continue to do what he's doing. You know, obviously I think Kershaw is going to continue to do what he's doing. And I think Bumgarner, and I think those three guys are really the cream of the crop and the guys you're going to have to watch for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the last that we're going to cover is saves, and who would have thunk it? Jean-Mar Gomez of the Philadelphia Phillies. That's right. Philadelphia Phillies playing the Tigers tonight. It was a 4-4 score last I saw. Miguel Cabrera hitting his two home runs on the night up to that point. Jean-Mar Gomez, 16 saves on the season. Just absolutely phenomenal. We talked about him a little bit last week, Steve. It's a great story right now. If he's able to keep it going, again, it's a lot of closing of psychology and being able to dominate for that one inning. It's not somebody that anybody really thought of as a closer, but it just shows you that there's longevity in baseball in the bullpen. I know you were able to do that and experience that, and you were able to extend your career, you know, with all the injuries that you had, all the unfortunateness that happened. There's a lot of guys that encounter that, but if it's not injuries, it's inconsistency. But some guys are just built maybe to go one inning, maybe a little bit longer than that. Jean-Mar Gomez is showing that this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sometimes you don't have success as a starter, and then you get put in the bullpen, and it really depends on a person's mindset and how they're able to deal with failure if that happens, which it will, because baseball is a game of failure. You fail most of the time in whatever you do. But, you know, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but out of his 15 saves, I mean, I think we might have to go look back and see how many have been three-run saves, two-run saves, and one-run saves, because that there has, you know, a lot to do with it. If you're 13 of 15 in one run, 13 out of 13 in one-run saves, then you're a guy that can be counted on. It's tough to get the last three outs of the game each and every time that you step out there. And you got to be mentally prepared for that, and you got to be, you know, extremely forgetful if it doesn't work out one night.
Absolutely. Jean-Mar Gomez, one of those guys who was a starter back when he came up with the Cleveland Indians, struggled. He was a starter back then, and just ERA closer to the fives, and then it was lower than that after he went into the bullpen when he went over to Pittsburgh back in 2013. Really amazing. You see the transformation. You look at his stats going from 17 starts in his worst season, 2012, at a 5.96 ERA with Cleveland, to eight starts with Pittsburgh Pirates, 34 games that season, 3.35 ERA, and it's been going down every year since, 3.19 in 2014, 3.01 last year, and 2.55 this year so far, 23 games pitched, 16 saves, 17 opportunities, and hopefully he's able to continue that. Honorable mention is somebody that I didn't think we'd ever talk about on the show, Erasmo Ramirez. He's been a fantasy godsend for me so far this year. He has totaled up 6 wins, last I checked. He was at 6 wins on the season as a reliever. I believe he had the one loss. And let me just confirm that. Yes. 6-1. Has 6 holds on the season. Does have a blown save. Whip of below 1. ERA of below 2. He's been phenomenal so far this year. For a reliever to be able to have 6 wins so far this year is pretty special. Also shows you that they're playing a lot of tight games late, and he's able to lock that up, plus obviously being in some good situations. So that wraps up this week's show. The only thing we have left to do, Steve, say our last licks, which I'd like to lead off, and I know for a fact that this is not something that you were going to bring up, because it's not something we've ever talked about or probably will ever talk about, but it's also something that deviates from what we normally do, is I'm going to use my last lick to ask you a question, because I was in the gym the other day. We had I was right. We were I was at the gym the other day doing my thing on the treadmill, and women's softball is on. Put it on, watching it. I love watching these girls play because there's a lot of heart there. They play hard. They throw hard. And a lot of them actually intimidate me as well. And they actually might intimidate a lot of major leaguers. But these girls can play. But there's one thing that I noticed on their arms, similar to what we see in the NFL sometimes. There's what looks like a little sleeve, a plastic sleeve on the arm that has notes, or it appeared to be notes there. So it got me thinking, would we ever see in the game of baseball, would we ever see either somebody have maybe a little microphone attached to them so they can get some of those notes that NFL players are able to get, you know, underneath the helmet, they're mic'd up, they're connected to the defensive coaches, all that. Will baseball ever be a sport because of all the data, all the analysis, all the setups and everything like that, where we see a guy having something on his arm that allows him to know the matchup against a pitcher, or a microphone, not a microphone, but an earpiece in his ear that allows the manager to speak to him during the game? I know it sounds far-fetched, but several years ago, instant replay and having a guy being able to challenge a call was far-fetched and way beyond baseball's realm. So I'd like to get your take on that. So that's my question to you. Do you think in our lifetimes we'll ever see something like that in baseball, like we see in football or in women's softball, like I saw the other day?
Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure you're going to see it on a pitcher like women's softball. I have noticed that too, as I've been flipping through the channels, that they're always looking at scouting reports or where they want to pitch each one of their opposing batters. So I honestly think if it does happen, the catcher will be the one who has the wrist guard on and mm-hmm. has a something there that it will remind himself. Be able to remind himself of who's hitting and, you know, what kind of pitches that, you know, the batter has trouble with. So I just think that we might see it. I will go as far as say we might see it, but it will not be on a pitcher. There will not be microphones and there will not be earpieces like a quarterback does getting plays in, but the catcher may have something on his arm to let him know.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how the game evolves that way, especially with all the data that's involved today and all that. But again, that remains to be seen. That's for the future, but something that's definitely good fodder, at least for the show.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And my last lick, you touched on it a little bit, but I want to go out west, and I want to go to Ooh. You know a few teams. I want to go to the Dodgers and how Clayton Kershaw is pitching. I want to go to San Diego, how Pomeranz is pitching. Yep. And then I want to go to San Francisco and see how Cueto, Samardzija, and Bumgarner are pitching. There are a lot of good pitchers in the NL West, and they're having very good years. And I just don't want people to forget about the West Coast. I know teams and people on the East Coast forget about it because the game starts so late. So, you know, these guys are on the West Coast. They're having tremendous seasons. And, you know, I just kind of want to bring them up and remind people that that these guys, you need to pay attention to them because these guys are going to be, you know, Cy Young runners coming into September. And they just need to be recognized. They need to be noticed, and they need to be, you know, understood that they're having tremendous seasons. All five of those that I said, and I'm sure that there's more out there too.
Mm-hmm. Just the formula for the San Francisco Giants, of course, working so far. Johnny Cueto signing that deal in the offseason, not as big as people would have thought. We talk about this at length. I believe that being traded to the Kansas City Royals actually hurt him in some respects because of how poorly he pitched for most of his time there. But he's actually ERA-wise, if you look at it, he's the worst out of all three, a 2.70 ERA, 6-1 heading into today. I believe he was starting today too. 61 Ks, 110 WHIP. Jeff Samardzija rehabbing, rebuilding, reclaiming his career. 266, 6-2 on the season. 55 Ks, 103 WHIP. All below, the WHIP and the ERA, well below his career average. You have Madison Bumgarner, of course, what needs to be said about him. 2.17 ERA, 2.99 career ERA, amazing what he's been able to do quietly. If he were in, and even though he's in a big market, but like you said, Steve, if he was in with the Yankees, probably be all you hear about. But 6-2 on the season, 77 strikeouts, 112 whip. Amazing story. Plus the other guys that you have mentioned, Pomeranz, just phenomenal. I was looking at his stats again today, and I could not believe what I was seeing. I had to clean my eyes out again. Had to kind of rub them for maybe a good 8 seconds to realize that those are his stats. He's been phenomenal so far this year. Hopefully that continues. And it's been a great baseball season so far. A lot of surprises, a lot of great stuff. And of course, we're going to see a lot more, and we'll be here to cover it and relay that over to you guys. Right now, we're about to sign off, but just give you one quick score. The Toronto Raptors are up big, I guess you could say big for the playoffs. It's halftime, they're up 57-41 against the Cleveland Cavs, considering how the Cavs were heading into the series, winning 8 straight and sweeping, obviously, the Pistons and then the Hawks, and then winning the first two against the Raptors to be down 18 is kind of a big deal so far. If they come back, you know, it's going to be a great comeback for them, and obviously swing the momentum back to their side. One last thing to mention, Steve, we didn't talk about it yet. Jackie Bradley Jr., you want to touch on that at all? I mean, just an amazing streak, what he's been able to do, not just extra base hits and the hitting streak, but just really capturing a lot of the headlines in baseball for a guy I never really thought would be talked about as you know, as much as he's been over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, he's just been white hot. I mean, he's been you know, tremendous for the past month. He's got a 27-game hitting streak. You know, he's just one of those guys who has come into his own. You know, I mean, it takes time. You can't just expect everybody to be a Mike Trout or a Bryce Harper when they come to the big league. Sometimes it takes guys a little bit longer to get acclimated, a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, it looks like he's done that.
Mm-hmm. It's a scary offense right there in Boston Red Sox. We'll be talking about them at length throughout the season. They're so good. Pitching is looking pretty solid with Stephen Wright. David Price struggling a little bit, but we believe that he'll pick that back up and be himself again. As of right now, we're done for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great week. We'll catch you next week. Stay tuned to CarsayandTheKid.com for details on next show and who are the guests that we have lined up in the coming show. So thanks again for tuning in, and thanks as always for your support.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. Have a good night.
Absolutely. Thank you.